The WEF want digital IDs. The WHO want vaccine passports. But to suggest that these non-elected bodies are working in conjunction makes you a conspiracy theorist and a fascist or a communist, depending on who you hate that week. Hello there, you 5.2 million awakening wonders. Thanks for joining us on this journey to truth. Many bumps on the road. Of course there are. Truth is a complicated and nuanced business, but we, as intelligent and awakening beings, can handle the conversation, deal with our own emotional complexity, our own prejudices, our own flaws, in order to pursue something noble, to come together in the mutual creation of something wonderful. Today we're going to be talking about our old friends at the WEF and the WHO, who seem to have some similar ideas for our well-being. They've come in to help us. They're going to have us digital ID'd up to the hilt. But is there a downside to being digital ID'd? I don't know. We'll look into it. We'll learn together. Maybe these people have our best interests at heart. If you are in the UK, come see me live where I can talk about these things with you directly, as well as meditate and do breath work. This is a live experience that you'll love. I'm in places like Carlisle, Plymouth, Newcastle, Hull, Bristol, Glasgow, fantastic British cities and towns. You'll have a lovely time. This is a wonderful experience. If you want to come see me, there's a link in the description. I'll see you there. It's fantastic stuff. Now let's get into some bloody news, shall we? The World Health Organization will meet with member states and reps from vaccine certification credentials groups to discuss a global vaccine certification system. Over the last 2 years, vaccine passports have become compulsory for international travel in some countries. However, different regions and countries have different standards when it comes to proof of vaccination, meaning a passport that is verifiable in one country might not be verifiable in the other. So we need some help. Is someone going to step in? Is some centralized, non-elected, dubiously funded body going to step in and save us? The World Health Organization wants to get involved. Oh, thank you. Get involved in pulling it all together under a global system. Who among you doesn't like a global system? Who watching this isn't praying for the day where we can have one centralized government dominated by billionaires and their funds and their foundations? Yeah, then we can get all the guidance we need from the WEF, the IMF, the WHO. Just in case you don't recognize English sarcasm, that was it then. The WHO says he wants to create a trust framework. We're going to give you a trust framework. And once we got you in the trust framework, you'll have to trust whatever the fuck we tell you. Why are there so many bars on this trust framework? Can I open that door? Not without your digital ID, you don't. It's okay. We've embedded it in your hand. Beep. For trust. Beep, beep. Why is the door not opening? We don't trust you. Which will allow the verification of a vaccine passport anywhere in the world. Oh, good. So you'll never be free. Co-founder of the Vaccination Credential Institute, VCI, Brian Anderson told Politico, VCI is the group behind smart health cards, which have been widely adopted in the US and have become the de facto vaccine credential standard. The WHO said that more details about the international vaccine pass would be released soon. That's all right, don't rush. We'll just wait for those terrifying WEF videos. Hello. In the future, you'll sit fucking still and be happy. You won't have a penny to your name, but you'll be so pleased with yourself, sat there, drooling in front of a screen. We're going to build you a nice trust framework. Would you like that? You don't need to tell me. I don't like to pry. The Gates Foundation is the second largest contributor to the WHO. As of September 2021, it had invested nearly $780 million that year. According to Politico in 2017, the Gates Foundation has pumped more than $2.4 billion into the WHO since the year 2000. Without wishing to suggest any malfeasance, do you have any concerns that an unelected, undemocratic body such as the WHO, that are significantly funded by the Gates Foundation, have an incredible amount of influence on global policies regarding something as significant as digital ID or vaccine passports? That transcends national democracy. In effect, that is already a kind of centralized form of government, not in an explicit and overt way, but if you consider government to be a synonym for control, and if you think that the outcomes, opinions, policies, ideas of WEF, WHO sometimes filter down in the same way that many of their apprentices, Trudeau, Putin, Merkel, Blair, Brown, end up in positions of government, that is an incredible amount of influence. I'm not suggesting that the WHO supersedes national democratic measures, but we can watch unfold, can't we, now in real time, whether or not global vaccine passports and digital IDs are implemented. And we can see how national and international media and national governments handle and convey that matter, knowing all the while for a fact that the Gates Foundation is the second largest funder of the WHO, which we can now see is where these policies and ideas originate from. Every government introducing a vaccine certification vows that their use is voluntary and no personal information will be held beyond its necessity. There you go, a vow from the government. Nothing else to worry about, nothing else to think about. When have a government ever gone back on a vow? But governments have been far from unanimous, even on such basics as whether you need to show the pass to enter a bar, much less on how long and by whom our intimate information will be held, owned, or overseen. New York, for one, is not expecting to mothball the technology when COVID wanes. Bought in for COVID, remains after COVID. Bought in for a reason, for a crisis, remains after the crisis. Along with IBM the designer, state bureaucrats are exploring how the platform could be retrofitted to verify other types of records and credentials, according to Vox. Experience with the Excelsior Pass has accelerated our thinking about digital government, said the architect of the program. I bet it's accelerated it, but we can show you documentation from 2016 that showed that these kind of programs were desired. So it was bought in for COVID. It's remaining after COVID. They're retrofitting how it could be used for, oh yeah, that's convenient, but you didn't have any plans prior to that then. Once biodata are collected and filed, cautioned Hamid Khan of the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, there's no delete button. Right, so once this thing is implemented, there is no going back. That would suggest to me that at a minimum, there should be some democratic procedure in place to ensure that it's what populations require. Now, you know that probably what would happen is that a state of fear would be generated that's so significant that people would vote, you know, oh God, we need it. We need it to help us. Because like it says, initially, these things will be introduced voluntarily. But then, oh, now there's a state of emergency. So we've got to keep it. And oh, we're going to apply it in this way. So without real democracy, which is the thing we're all promised and pledged, that's what we go to war for, right? Because we're a democracy. Well, in a democratic situation, what you would do is you would discuss that and people would vote for it, and if they voted against it, you wouldn't have it. But people don't like democracy because sometimes democracy leads to the will of the people being implemented. When biometric data, bodily attributes digitized, are married to surveillance technology, both the potential for profit and the ambitions of the techno-futurists inflate without limit. We've already seen the impact of social media, how we can mine consciousness and mold behavior. That's before we get to the level of knowing about biodata and stuff that sort of sounds frightening and futuristic even to discuss. If anything, there is a requirement for regulation around this stuff that involves the will of ordinary people, not more measures introduced that you can't walk back. It sounds like the individual pieces are falling into place to create a kind of dystopic metaverse where you are denied access to facilities or services because you don't have enough ticks next to the right vaccines, or you don't have the right kind of credit score or social credit score. Once you put these measures in place, then people in positions of corporate and governmental power can determine how it's utilized. So my general sense would be resist it pretty vehemently from the offset. One industry analyst predicts that the global biometrics market will grow 15% annually, reaching nearly $105 billion by 2028. The British tech firm Onfido envisions a seamless EU-wide identity verification, or IDV, system for online gambling, telemedicine, car rentals, electronic voting, and more. Scientists in academe and industry are working on a global biodata repository. It would be naive to assume these networks would not be linked. Convenience is how this will be sold, won't it? Like when I started to read electronic voting, telemedicine, I think, oh, this will be so simple. We'll just be able to. What are you saving all this time for? What is this convenience? How's it working out for you? Even on the last century's models of convenience, consumer durables and machines and stuff, hasn't led to more time. Your phone doesn't lead you to have more time. This is not the direction in which enlightenment is achieved. This is not for your benefit. It's pretending to be for your benefit, so that you comply, but it's for their benefit. In 2020, Onfido called its immunity passport in development the linchpin of a new normality in a post-COVID-19 society. Terrifying phrase there, new normality. Once something is normal, you don't question it at all. It's just ordinary. That's just the way it is. This year, the company's chief privacy officer, got your work cut out, mate, told Biometric Update that proven immunity to the virus d'Azure might become a basic permission attribute. What's troubling about that is that even with the last virus, it's now been proved that natural immunity and some smaller than recommended amount of vaccination are at least as effective, and much data suggests more effective than the recommended three doses of the vaccine. We'll show you that video. We'll link to it at the end. Yet the CDC has not updated its policy to acknowledge and recognise natural immunity in any form. So imagine that application to these suggested measures, that is not even about immunity, is about following the sanctioned and prescribed steps, regardless of what science might say about immunity. So it doesn't become about immunity, it becomes about control. It becomes about do as you're told. The surveillance technologies of the war on contagion are inherited from the war on terror, and the software is encoded with the same forever war mentality. Both fight risk rather than actual threat. When the enemy is protean, like suicide bombers and viruses, the calculation of risk is easily manipulated and often subjective. And I would say just on the individual level, we're kept in a state of anxiety and fear because risk is perpetual. I'm a person that feels a lot of anxiety and fear. If I'm told there's terror threats and disease threats, you know, I'm in a state of constant anxiety. And you know yourself, when you're in those states, the way you respond to control is different. You welcome control because you're afraid. When I'm frightened, just on a personal level, I want someone, I want mummy and daddy, come and take care of me. What psychological role do you think the state ultimately plays? But in creating an environment of anxiety, you facilitate further control. Risk cloaked in statistics is a ghost in a suit. It starts to resemble a person. Who is the terrorist? Who is the COVID carrier? Among the contradictions of the pandemic is that collective safety requires honesty and mutual trust. Yet the expression of that trust is vigilant mutual suspicion. The best bet is to fear everyone. What does that do to a society? What kind of environment does that create? What kind of communities does that create? And I'm talking about when you're down the shops, when you're out and about, when you're in your car. What does it feel like to be a human in your world? The world you were born to, that you inherited, that you have a right to participate in, that you have a right not to live in fear and under perpetual control in. The vaccination passport seems to solve this problem, replacing suspicion with certainty. But in admitting the vaccinated and deporting the unvaccinated, it also sorts the good biocitizen from the outlaw. Again, there's complexity to that. Watch our video on natural immunity, which a matter of months ago, you weren't even allowed to discuss at all. So these things change. The rhetoric of contagion has long mobilised xenophobia and legitimised racist and eugenicist citizenship and immigration policies. University historian Alan M. Kraut calls this medicalised nativism. Probably the evolutionary origins of suspicion of strangers in part is to some degree due to the suspicion of disease, change, the unknown. I'm talking in like atavistic fears that remain from hundreds of thousands of years ago. These things can be mobilised and utilised. It's helpful to keep people in a state of fear and desire. What do I tell you? What communication methods do our commodifying consumerist state use the whole time? Be frightened, here is an image of desire, you're not good enough. It keeps you spellbound and tethered to sets of ideas and systems that eliminate your ability to have bodily and personal autonomy. Passports have everything to do with borders, says Janelle Johnson, Associate Professor of Rhetoric, Politics and Culture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and co-editor of Biocitizenship, The Politics of Bodies, Governance and Power. Securing borders is all about fear. The action of fear is to restrict movement. The passport allows for movement in both physical and economic ways. It also immediately suggests belonging, the people who belong and the people who don't. I know those of you that love the Bible will be talking right now about the mark and carrying the mark, and all citizens will carry the mark. The vaccine passport embodies the contradictions of the pandemic that birthed it. It guards borders, divides us from them. It also facilitates travel, and travel is an antidote to tribalism. In either case, it's not going away. Therefore, if it is indeed the prototype linchpin of a future global digital hyper-surveillance apparatus, we must demand that it be universally accessible, publicly owned and regulated, its workings transparent, and its uses stringently defined. Now, one thing we can be sure of when it comes to the WEF, the WHO, the Bill Gates Foundation, is that their end point, the destination of all this planning, all of this conjecture and discussion and funding is not, and now we give it to the public and they'll democratically vote. These things are privately introduced, privately regulated. There's no democracy. There's no public ownership. There's no transparency. whatever you think about the pandemic that we've been going through, one thing I'm sure you'll agree with is that the narrative kept shifting. There were things that could be discussed and things that couldn't be discussed. And the narrative shifted as more information became available or convenient, you might even argue. So indeed, as the writer says, if there is to be a technological advance of this nature, it very much should belong in the hands of the public. Are you confident that that's what will happen if the demands of the WHO, WEF, the Bill Gates Foundation are fulfilled? Because one thing I've noticed over the last, well, I don't know, four decades or so, that transparency and democracy do not seem to be at the forefront of the intentions of the powerful. Of course, the rhetoric is very, very attractive and useful. Simplification, reductivism, all spewed out into the public space. But when it comes to, hey, I don't actually want to do this, your voice is usually eliminated and you're called a misinformationist or a terrorist or a whatever it is this weakest that legitimizes the shutting down of your particular voice. But that's just what I think. What do you think about this story? Is this something you've been aware of for a little while? How do you think we stand up to these powerful interests? What kind of alliances, nationally and internationally, do ordinary people need to start to form in order to be able to stand up to this stuff? You tell me in the comments below, because this conversation is what educates me. It's you that gives me the ability to understand these issues more clearly. Give this video a little like, share it around. If you enjoyed this video, have a look at the one before where we talked about natural immunity and that kind of stuff. It's an interesting complement to this video. Or have a look at this one. If you want to come and see me live, I'm in places like Carlisle, Plymouth, Bristol, Glasgow. I'd love to see you there. There's a link in the description. Sign up to my mailing list if you want to. It's just one click away. Most of all, though, please, for God's sake, if you can, if it's still legal, stay free.